It is Monday, August 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States and Mexico reach a new trade agreement. A new United Nations report accuses Myanmar's generals of genocide and war crimes. And we hear how the new film Crazy Rich Asians is breaking cultural stereotypes and the box office. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump Monday said he intends to terminate the North American Free Trade Agreement and replace it with the United States-Mexico Trade Agreement.
Yeah, we'll get rid of the name NAFTA. It has a bad connotation because the United States was hurt very badly by NAFTA for many years. And now it's a really good deal for both countries, and we look very much forward to it.
Trump commented after announcing an understanding with Mexico that could overhaul the 24-year-old trade pact, which Trump has called a disaster. He spoke to Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto, who was on a speakerphone and spoke through an interpreter.
I think this is something very positive
for the United States and
Mexico.
Peña Nieto said he was hopeful Canada can join the new agreement.
It is our wish, Mr. President, that now Canada will also be able to be incorporated in all this.
Trump also spoke of an outreach to Canada.
Canada will start negotiations shortly. I'll be calling the Prime Minister very soon, and we'll start negotiation. And if they'd like to negotiate fairly, we'll do that. You know, they have tariffs of almost 300% on some of our dairy products, so we can't have that. We're not going to stand for that. I think with Canada, frankly, the easiest thing we can do is to tariff their cars coming in. It's a tremendous amount of money, and it's a very simple negotiation. It could end in one day, and we take in a lot of money the following day.
Peña Nieto leaves office on December 1st, turning over the Mexican government to his successor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. That means the clock is ticking to give Mexico's legislature enough time to ratify it before the change of administration. The White House is also expected to formally notify Congress by the end of this week of its intention to sign a new trade agreement within 90 days. In Ottawa, officials are expressing resilience. The Canadian Foreign Ministry in a statement said, "We will only sign a new NAFTA that is good for Canada and good for the middle class," indicating Ottawa's willingness to continue to work toward a modernized NAFTA. The three North American countries do about $1 trillion in trade among themselves annually. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. New U.S. sanctions on Russia are coming into effect. Tributes pour in for Senator John McCain, but not from President Trump. Kenya's president believes peace with the opposition will hold. And tense local polls in Mozambique could signal a major political shift. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the recently released State of the Climate Report, annual average air temperatures in the Arctic are increasing at twice the rate than the rest of the world. Researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, and Berkeley Labs have released a new study that indicates that with increasing Arctic temperatures, vegetation growth is booming in areas that were once thought too frigid to support plant life. The study shows that 16% of Arctic land, where it was once too cold for plant growth in 1982, now sustains vegetation. Study first author Trevor Keenan from Berkeley Labs says that while augmented vegetation growth, with its increased ability to absorb carbon dioxide, may sound like good news, it represents a major disruption to the delicate balance of the cold ecosystem. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you. This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Pope Francis refuses to comment on a letter calling for his resignation. A United Nations fact-finding mission is calling for Myanmar's senior leaders to be referred to the International Criminal Court to be investigated and prosecuted for genocide against the Rohingya Muslim minority in northern Rakhine State and crimes against humanity and war crimes in Kachin and Shan states. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein has more for VOA on the UN report.
This 400-page groundbreaking report goes into detail about the scope and viciousness of the atrocities it says were committed by Myanmar's high command against the country's ethnic minorities. The report accuses the generals of perpetrating what it calls the gravest crimes under international law. The three-member independent international fact-finding mission on Myanmar says the genocidal crimes, which forced the mass exodus of more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees into Bangladesh 1 year ago were planned years in advance. In an unprecedented move, the UN mission has named the six top generals it says bear the main responsibility for planning and executing these crimes. Investigator Christopher Sidotti says the mission has gathered sufficient evidence of the elements of the crime of genocide to recommend they be investigated and prosecuted before an international tribunal.
In Myanmar, there is a very clear chain of command, and there is no doubt in our minds whatsoever that what we saw happen in Rakhine as a whole would not have happened without it firstly being within the knowledge of the senior military leadership, and secondly, under their effective control. And it's because of the clarity of the chain of command in Myanmar that we have recommended the investigation and prosecution of these six.
The report finds the civilian authorities have little power to control the actions of the military. However, it blames them for enabling these crimes by ignoring the atrocities being committed. It also criticizes Aung San Suu Kyi, the human rights activist turned politician, as head of the government for not using her moral authority to prevent the events unfolding in Rakhine State. The government refused to grant the mission access to majority Buddhist Myanmar. So the mission gathered evidence from the testimony of 875 victims and eyewitnesses, satellite imagery, documents, photographs, and videos. The mission sent an advance copy of its report to the Myanmar government. So far, there has been no response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Pope Francis has refused to confirm or deny the contents of a bombshell letter by former Vatican ambassador to the United States, Carlo Maria Vigano. In the letter given to Catholic media outlets, the now-retired archbishop accused the pope of covering up for the sexual misconduct of a U.S. cardinal and urged the pope to set a good example and resign. Sabina Castelfranco has more from Rome.
Pope Francis's weekend visit to Ireland was dominated by the issue of clerical sexual abuse right up to the end on his return flight to Rome, when journalists asked the pontiff to comment on a letter written by Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, former Vatican ambassador to the United States. The 11-page document given on Sunday to Catholic media outlets as the pontiff was on his second day in Ireland accused Pope Francis of having known for years about the allegations of sexual misconduct by U.S. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. After credible evidence of abuse of a 16-year-old emerged, Pope Francis last month accepted McCarrick's resignation, the first of its kind by a cardinal. Vigano wrote, "In this extremely dramatic moment for the Universal Church, he must acknowledge his mistakes, and in keeping with the proclaimed principle of zero tolerance, Pope Francis must be the first to set a good example for cardinals and bishops who covered up McCarrick's abuses and resign along with all of them." Vigano, who was ambassador to the United States from 2011 to 2016, said he told Pope Francis about the accusations against McCarrick in June 2013. A U.S. journalist on the papal plane returning to Rome from Ireland asked the pope to comment on the letter.
Su, io ho letto questa mattina quel comunicato. Ho letto e io dirò.
Pope Francis said he had read the document and asked the journalists to do the same. He asked them to read the letter and judge for themselves. He said he would not say one word on the contents, adding that he thought the statement spoke for itself. He told those on the papal plane he believed they had sufficient journalistic capacity to be able to reach their own conclusions. Viganò also named the current Archbishop of Washington, Cardinal Donald Wuerl, who succeeded McCarrick, of having received information about McCarrick from the Vatican. Wuerl's spokesman flatly denied this. During a Mass Sunday in Ireland, Pope Francis asked for forgiveness for the scandal and betrayal felt by the victims of clerical sexual abuse, as protesters expressed anger at the Church's handling of the abuse scandals. The Pope also privately met with a group of abuse survivors during his visit. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Citing damage to its economy, Iran Monday asked the International Court of Justice to order the U.S. to lift sanctions against Tehran, which it calls a violation of their 1955 Friendship Treaty. It could take months for the World Court to render a verdict. The action comes a day after the Iranian parliament removed the country's economy minister amid a mounting economic crisis. Also Sunday, Iran's defense minister in Damascus pledged to assist Syria in its reconstruction once the seven-year conflict is over, despite demands by the U.S., Israel, and Sunni Arab nations that Iran leave the country. Benham Ben Taleblou is an Iran analyst at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He spoke with International Edition's Victor Beatty.
Iran has long-standing ties to the Assad regime in Syria, and we've seen basically for the past 6 to 7 years how the Islamic Republic, with Russian support, has been able to basically bail out and save the Assad regime. And Assad is in many ways indebted to the Islamic Republic and Russia. The trip by Iran's defense minister to Syria comes at a very important time. As we know, last week, American National Security Advisor John Bolton went to Israel, talked about the future of Syria, talked about Iranian troops and influence in the region, and also met with his Russian counterpart later in the week. We know that the Americans and the Russians profess an interest in having no Iranian troops remain in Syria after the war comes to an end. But Iran's defense minister meeting with the Syrian president is a highly public rebuke of that position.
This obviously would not be welcomed in Israel.
Neither in Israel nor in Washington. And if you take the Russians at their word, then Moscow as well.
Let's turn the Iranian economy. The finance minister removed by parliament on Sunday. This is the latest cabinet official to be sacked. What does that mean?
Well, you have the hardline conservative parliament looking to put pressure on the Rouhani administration using any means possible. But more importantly, this is not just a story of Iranian factionalism. This is a story about the return of the sanctions, as well as Rouhani and the presidency's in general mismanagement of the Iranian economy. Iran is a country of great wealth, but squandered potential. And when you look at how Iran has been handling the currency crisis, the multiple currency crisis, as well as the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal, there's been a massive decline or depreciation in the value of the Iranian rial, crackdown on foreign exchange markets, and basically the Iranian economy is shrinking and inflation is growing, unemployment is growing. While, yes, the conservative hardline parliamentarians were right to rebuke the administration, their criticism was actually quite interesting. They critiqued the Rouhani administration not just for sanctions, but for mismanaging the internal economy. I would simply broaden that criticism to say it's all sides of the Iranian political spectrum, no matter how narrow they are.
Did the Iranian government squander the opportunities presented by the 2015 nuclear deal that would have lifted sanctions and given them a chance to improve the economy?
That question is a very important question. It's a three-part answer. Yes, on the face of it, they absolutely squandered the potential. The best proof of this is where the Iranian people are out in the streets chanting, forget about Syria, think about us. They're saying no to Gaza, no to Lebanon, but on my life only for Iran. The Iranian people, I would say, clearly had inflated expectations because of the Rouhani administration, because of statements from Foreign Minister Zarif about what this deal could do for them. And in the end, the deal only enriched the worst of the worst in Iran.
Benjamin Taleblou. He's an Iran analyst at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Meanwhile, inflation is running in the double digits. Unemployment is above 12% and even higher among young people, while the currency, the real, has lost more than half of its value since April. Sporadic protests have hit dozens of cities and towns, with at least 25 killed and thousands arrested in recent months. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. John Chu's romantic comedy Crazy Rich Asian showcases lavish sets and beautiful people. Set against the exotic and ultra-modern backdrop of Singapore, the film rewards its audience with an uplifting modern-day fairy tale. But what makes this Hollywood film stand out is its all-Asian cast. VOA's Penelope Pulu looks at the movie's box office success and the significance this success has on the Asian community.
March, we've been dating for over a year now, and I think it's about time people met my beautiful girlfriend. What about us taking an adventure east?
Like Queens?
Singapore, Colin's wedding. Don't you want to be my family?
As the young couple sets out for Singapore, what Rachel, an NYU economics professor, does not know is that Nick Young, played by Henry Golding, is the scion of one of the city-state's wealthiest families and one of its most eligible bachelors. Before she even gets there, her picture has gone viral on social media, and as soon as she arrives, she becomes the target of many wealthy young women who aspire to marry Nick. Nick's formidable mother, Eleanor Young, played by Michelle Yeoh, feels that American-born Rachel, played by Constance Wu, is not suitable for her son. She rejects the young woman's American values of independence and self-determination as an affront to Singapore's traditionalist values.
That's a beautiful ring.
Nick's father had it made when he proposed to me.
Last year they met at Cambridge. They're both studying law together.
Oh, I didn't know you were a lawyer.
I withdrew from university when we got married.
Oh.
I chose to help my husband run a business and to raise a family. For me, it was a privilege. But for you, you may think it's old-fashioned.
Rachel's and Nick's relationship unfolds against the sophisticated backdrop of the Asian island's exotic landscapes and mouth-watering culinary creations. The cast features funny, quirky, and serious characters, all of them impeccably dressed, impossibly rich, and all of them Asian.
And I love the fact that we have Asians from Australia, from England, from Costa Rica, from America, from Singapore, from Malaysia. We have Asians from all over.
Constance Wu says the film moves away from the cliched image of the Asian as a disenfranchised minority in the U.S.
So frequently, Hollywood thinks that Asians are this one monolith. Like, there isn't a difference between Asian Asians and Asian Americans, or British Asians, or Australian Asians. And there's a difference, because there's a cultural difference.
I know
the fact that this movie really differentiates that is something that doesn't happen a lot.
The film's message and its lavish cinematography have paid off. The film has become a box office hit, elevating the hopes of cast and fans that Asian actors are finally becoming part of Hollywood's mainstream. Victoria Loke, who plays wealthy socialite Fiona Chang, spoke to us via Skype from Singapore about the film's success.
During filming, we never really thought about how big an impact this was going to make. So many Asian American audiences have, you know, messaged us separately as actors, our director, our producers, thanking us for being having a stake and being a part of this representation of the Asian American community.
Despite the film's box office success, Loke says there has also been criticism.
This is about Crazy Rich Asians. It's about a very small niche, and of course, you know, there will be a lot of fair criticism about the fact that it doesn't represent fully the entire population.
Representative or not, the film has been playing out to sold-out theaters in Asia and the U.S., and Victoria Loke has just confirmed it has been green-lighted for a sequel. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
All about the new movie Crazy Rich Asians. Well, while condolences and remembrances pour in for the late Senator John McCain here in the United States, he's also being remembered overseas, including in the nation where he was a prisoner of war for 5 years. McCain, who died Saturday at the age of 81, was shot down flying a bombing mission in Vietnam in 1967, but is known more in that country for what he did in mending ties and normalizing relations with the United States in recent years. Flowers have been left at a monument near where his plane went down, and a book of condolences at the U.S. Embassy in Hanoi allows residents to pay their respects. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to take a comprehensive approach to the Iranian regime because of the wide-ranging nature of Iran's malign activities, including violent and destabilizing behavior toward the United States, its allies, and the Iranian people themselves. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo recently announced the creation of a special group of foreign affairs professionals at the State Department called the Iran Action Group to implement and coordinate a comprehensive approach. In announcing the IAG, as it is called, Secretary Pompeo noted that since the United States withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, which failed to restrain Iran's nuclear progress or its campaigns of violence, President Donald Trump has instituted a campaign of pressure, deterrence, and solidarity with the long-suffering Iranian people.
Our hope is that one day soon we can reach a new agreement with Iran. But we must see major changes in the regime's behavior, both inside and outside of its borders. The Iranian people and the world are demanding that Iran finally act like a normal nation.
Special Representative for Iran Brian Hook will lead the Iran Action Group. He told reporters that the team will continue to work with allies and other nations around the world to build the broadest level of international support for the approach the U.S. is taking, building on areas of agreement and working to find consensus on areas of disagreement.
When you look at the range of Iranian threats, especially around missiles and cyber, maritime aggression, terrorism, these are concerns of other nations. The United States is not alone in that regard.
Special Representative Hook noted that if the Iranian regime demonstrates changes in its behavior, then the president is prepared to engage in dialogue in order to find solutions. But, he said, the sanctions relief, the reestablishment of full diplomatic and commercial relations with the United States, and economic cooperation with the United States can only begin after we see that the Iranian regime is serious about changing its behavior.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.